Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
We are to put to death the deeds of the body. So there is that active element in our sanctification where we are taking the measures by the grace of God to stop looking, stop touching, stop going to the places where we have these temptations and these vulnerabilities. God gives us strength to do that.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Sermon on the Mount. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 through 30, in a message titled, Jesus and the Severity of Sin. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
Paul talks about the fact that before his own conversion, how he said regarding the law, he was blameless. Wow, how could you be blameless regarding the law? Well, Paul thought that the law was really pretty much just, you know, make sure you don't do these things, and he had really worked hard to not do them. But then he writes this in Romans chapter 7, verse 9. He says, I was alive once without the law, but when the commandment came, sin revived and I died. And what Paul is describing here is the moment in time when the reality of the internal breadth of the commandment struck him. So he says, I was alive once without the law. Paul never was without the law. He was born under the law. He was born into the nation of Israel, and therefore he was always under the law. But when he says, I was alive once without the law, means he didn't understand the full extent of the law. So he was fine. If you would have asked Paul before this moment of understanding came to him about the commands, he would have said, of course, I've kept them all. But when the commandment came, in other words, when he understood the depth and the breadth of the commandment, that it wasn't merely external, but that it was meant to govern the thoughts and the intents of the heart, and the very passage that Paul says was the determining factor for him was the passage, the final commandment, you shall not covet. And the religious leaders should have known that anyway. The seventh commandment said, you shall not commit adultery. But the tenth commandment said, you shall not desire your neighbor's wife. So the tenth commandment even clarified that it was not just behavior, it was attitude that was also included. So this is what Paul is describing here. So he says, when the commandment came, in other words, when I understood the breadth and the depth of the commandment, sin revived and I died. All of a sudden, Paul says, I realize, oh, wait, I am a sinner. And he says, I died, meaning that sin slew him. So what Jesus is teaching here, just to sum it up, is that no one has kept the law and can therefore trust in their own righteousness for acceptance with God. That is part of what Jesus is doing here in this sermon. And remember, Jesus said to them, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom. This is what he's talking about. The righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees was that external righteousness. But Jesus said, your righteousness has to go beyond that. And it has to be a righteousness that is actually beyond your grasp. So Jesus is saying, you might never have committed the outward act of adultery or murder, but you have broken the command in your heart. We all have done that. He's forcing us to look beyond ourselves to the grace of God for salvation. So that's the first thing. Now, secondly, let's look at the second point. Jesus here is not removing the command. And this is where the application goes beyond the immediate listener, the Israelite, those who were already connected with the law. This is where the application goes to God's kingdom people. Jesus does not lower the standard for his kingdom people. He elevates it. So you see, Jesus brings clarity. He says, you have heard that it was said. This is what you've been thinking all along. But no, that's not the extent of it. This is what it actually means. And so he's raising the standard. As his people, we are not only going to keep ourselves from adultery, we are going to have our hearts renewed so that we do not look at one another lustfully, wondering how you can please me, but we look at each other purely wondering how we can honor one another and glorify God in our relationships. You see, this is what the life in the kingdom is supposed to look like. And this is why it's such a great, great travesty and a contradiction of the life of the kingdom when we find adultery in our midst. And sometimes, of course, we find adultery even among those who lead within the church. But when that's the case, it's a complete repudiation of what Jesus is actually teaching and what life in the kingdom is ultimately all about. Now, adultery, just for clarification, adultery is, here's a definition, a voluntary sexual encounter between a married man and someone other than his wife, or between a married woman and someone other than her husband. A voluntary sexual encounter. Now, there are still places today where adultery is illegal. But the definition of adultery, the legal definition of adultery, is sexual intercourse. But I think the biblical definition would be sexual encounter. See, because some people have said, well, you know, we actually never had intercourse, so I'm really not guilty of adultery. Well, whose interpretation of the law are you looking at? You might be looking at the state's interpretation there and saying, I'm fine. But when you look at God's understanding of what adultery is, any sexual encounter with a person that you are not married to. Now, again, just for clarification, adultery is very specific. It's dealing with unfaithfulness to the marital covenant. But there's also the term, and we read it earlier in the quote from the 15th chapter of Matthew, and the two are side by side, adultery, sexual immorality. So sexual immorality is oftentimes, the word that's translated sexual immorality is porneia, is the Greek word, but it's a very broad word, and it sort of just includes everything that is outside of what God permits. So adultery would be included in sexual immorality, but the distinct feature of adultery is that it is married people who are violating the covenant, where sexual immorality does not necessarily apply to married people. Sometimes the word porneia in the older translations, mostly it's translated fornication, which would then be defined as premarital sex. So just a clarification on that. Now, here's an interesting thing though. Although adultery is often glorified in films and novels in such a way as to make it seem that everyone is either having an affair or going to have an affair, in the statistics actually tell a different story, amazingly, even presently. Now, if you watch TV or whatever you watch, network TV or Netflix or Prime or, you know, whatever, If you go to the cinema, you're going to get the feeling so often that everybody does adultery. It's just what everybody does. But the statistics are different. In the U.S., this kind of fascinated me, really. In the U.S., 60 to 70% of married couples remain faithful to each other throughout their lifetime. So 4 out of 10, 3 out of 10. I think that's interesting, considering what is so often presented to us. Adultery, universally, the betrayal of adultery is one of the most emotionally painful experiences anyone can go through. And even where there's, you know, the either blatant or subtle promotion of having an affair, whether it be through film or novels or whatever the case, you know, there's not a single person that is the victim of adultery that doesn't experience the pain of that betrayal. So even though it's so often presented as something, and sometimes you can read articles where the impression is being given like, hey, this is the next exciting thing for your life. Things have become bored, or you've become bored in your marital relationship. Have an affair. That's the way to spice everything up. The people who are writing that know that it isn't true, because adultery only always results in pain, and that pain is often extended beyond the victim to others, especially children, family, and even friends. Adultery has ruined friendships outside the marriage. This is the impact. So this is no doubt one of the reasons Jesus speaks such stern words of warning to those considering or engaging in adultery. Now look what Jesus then says, verse 29. He says, if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go to hell. Now, what in the world is Jesus saying here? Now, let's just understand right up front, Jesus is using exaggerated speech here, intentionally. Jesus is speaking with hyperbole. And when you speak with hyperbole, it's to emphasize. It's an exaggerated statement. It's like when we say, gosh, I'm starving to death. And we just ate 3 hours ago. So we know we're not really starving to death, but we are hungry and we want to express that. So Jesus often uses hyperbole. Pluck out your eye, cut off your hand. Jesus is not saying that anyone should ever literally do that. Now, a few Christians whose zeal greatly exceeded their wisdom have taken Jesus literally here and mutilated themselves. This has happened. One of the best known examples, perhaps, is the 3rd century scholar Origen of Alexandria. This man, Origen, he was so brilliant. He was truly a scholar. He was heretical in some areas as well, but he was indeed a brilliant person. But he went to extremes of asceticism. Asceticism is the practice of denying yourself any physical pleasure. So Origen went to extremes of asceticism. He renounced possessions, food. He renounced sleep. And in an over-literal interpretation of this passage, he made himself a eunuch. So his zeal exceeded his wisdom. Jesus never intended that we actually literally, physically do this. What is Jesus saying to us about dealing with sin? Well, remember this. Of course, Jesus knows better than anyone that gouging out an eye or cutting off a hand will not change a sinful heart. You know, this was the problem that began to surface in the, not only began to surface, but I think still does exist in some cases, in the ancient monasteries. In the monastery, the idea was that you would get yourself so far away from worldly types of things and temptation that you would no longer battle or struggle with these things. But what many in the monasteries began to discover is that it didn't matter how far out in the desert they were. It didn't matter how locked away from the world they had placed themselves. They still struggled with all of the desire internally. And of course, Jesus knows that. That's what he's saying in the context here. He's talking about that very thing. His point is to show that sin is so serious that no one can afford to let it go unchecked. So Jesus is using this really kind of jarring language to get people to wake up to the reality of how destructive sin is. Because isn't it true that we tend to just oftentimes think that sin is really not that bad? I mean, yes, of course, I know that I shouldn't do this, but it's not that big of a deal. Well, Jesus thinks differently. And he wants us to understand really the severity of sin. So his point is to show that sin is so serious that no one can afford to let it go unchecked. The answer is not gouging out your eye or cutting off your hand. The answer is heart renewal through a genuine commitment to following Jesus and living the way he's taught and shown us to live. That's the bigger picture of what the Bible teaches about all of this. And that's what Jesus is wanting to bring them to at this point. Showing them that no one is righteous. No one has kept actually what God intended with the commandments. And therefore, no one can save themselves. We need salvation from outside. And that, of course, is what Jesus came to bring. Now, John Stott, the well-known British theologian who we quote quite often, John Stott, I think on a practical note, he had something good to say, because there is that place we have to recognize. There is that place where we cease our own efforts. We receive the grace of God. We are indwelt by the Spirit of God. And it's through that that we are able to walk in the Spirit and have the victory. But sometimes we mistakenly think that that excludes effort on our part, that it all just is automatically going to happen. But what we find is that, no, there still is a war. And maybe you remember in Paul's letter to the Galatians, he talks about that reality that we as God's people, although we are people of the Spirit, although we are born of the Spirit, although we are indwelt by the Spirit, we still have that human nature that has fallen to contend with. And so Stott here, I think, gives some good practical advice when it comes to our part in dealing with sin. And so he said this. He said, if your eye causes you to sin because temptation comes to you through the things you see, then don't look. The answer is not gouge out your eye. The answer is, for you as a believer, don't look. Or if it's your hand, the things you do that are causing you to sin, don't do it. Or, because in another context, Jesus adds your feet to this. Or if it's your feet, the places you go, don't go. And then he says this, behave as if you had actually cut off your hands and feet and were now crippled, so you can no longer do the things that you do or go the places you go. Then Stott says this, finally. He says, this is what it means to put to death the deeds of the flesh. Now, of course, this sermon was given in the ministry of Jesus, and foundational truths are laid out in this sermon, but so much of what is here is further developed and elaborated on as we go into the writings of the apostles. And so Paul would say to the Colossians, for example, that we are to mortify or to put to death. He would say this to the Romans as well. We are to put to death the deeds of the body. So there is that active element in our sanctification where we are taking the measures by the grace of God to stop looking, stop touching, stop going to the places where we have these temptations and these vulnerabilities. God gives us the strength to do that. In closing, it's interesting that Jesus uses adultery as a basis for talking very dramatically about sin. And I think he did that because adultery, in so many ways, illustrates the true destructive nature of sin. All around us, we see wreckage and brokenness caused by adultery. And I think one of the big problems that we often have is that we just fail to pause and think for a moment. Think of the people who have literally wrecked their lives and the lives of so many people around them because of an adulterous affair. And I've often wondered, like, you know, what if you would have just thought about that for just a few minutes before you went headlong into it? What if you could have just stopped and thought about where this is going to end up? You know, one of the most notorious adulterous relationships in all of history is recorded for us in the Bible. Remember the story of King David and Bathsheba. That is a story of adultery. David took a married woman to himself and had a sexual relationship with her. And David, this man who was God's man, this man who was blessed extraordinarily by God, at the pinnacle of his greatness, he foolishly indulges himself and he brings disaster on the rest of his life and his family. Wow. So I think Jesus, again, is using adultery here to show the severity of sin because the consequences are so real. And he wants us to understand that sin is not forbidden because God doesn't want you to enjoy your life. Sin is forbidden because God doesn't want you to destroy your life. And he knows that that's what sin will do. Here's the beautiful thing about the gospel. Jesus is able, even in a case of adultery, to forgive, to heal and restore.
We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as he continues his series on the Sermon on the Mount. Thank you for listening to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson. These programs exist to help believers grow in God's Word and to point others to Jesus Christ. Back to Basics is fully supported by listeners like you. Your generosity allows us to share these Bible teachings daily on radio and podcast. To support the ministry or sign up for our newsletter, visit backtobasicsradio.com. And now, here's Pastor Brian.
These words of Jesus that we've considered have been misunderstood by some, and sadly misapplied. If your hand offends you, cut it off. If your eye offends you, pluck it out. Did Jesus really literally intend for us to do that?
The answer is no, because you can cut off your hand and you can pluck out your eye, but that hasn't solved the problem of the sin in our hearts. And so Jesus is just wanting us to see how serious this matter of sin is. And so what we do is we don't cut off our hand or pluck out our eye, but we come to Him in humility, asking for forgiveness and the power to live the way that He wants us to live.
Back to Basics is the listener-supported preaching and teaching ministry of Pastor Brian Broderson.